accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
They taught you good. Made you believe their world.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Paradigm. I'm your host, Paul Brackell. This is a podcast in which we seek to examine everything through a biblical worldview and get beyond the modern day paradigm and look at such things as the COVID pandemic and actually get to the bottom of what was really going on. Was it a plandemic? Was there actually a virus by the name of COVID-19? Or was it all just a control agenda? Is it worth voting? Does your vote even matter? Or is politics just completely rigged from top to bottom? We're told we live in the free world here in the West. Are we really free? Or is this a system of enslavement? We've talked about many topics previously on this podcast, such as giants. Obviously, the mainstream narrative is giants aren't real. Well, we've sought to, in previous episodes, show that giants were real. We've obviously said that because of the Bible, and I believe the Bible, that the Bible talks about giants, and that's the reason I believe in giants. But we've also sort of looked at some of the other extra biblical text. We've had a number of guests on here talk about that. We've spoke about the UFO phenomena, that it's ubiquitous around the world and that we can't ignore it. But in today's episode, this is something that's particularly relevant for us today as we hear the drums of war beating yet again. But if you're a regular listener to this podcast, could I ask you to do me a favour and leave me a 5-star rating? I've seen that a number of other people recently over the last week have started doing this. And if you just go on wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcast or wherever it is, and you just leave a review, it helps this podcast become more visible. And that helps people find it a lot easier. So we build up a greater following and reach many more people in many different countries. And I've noticed just this week there's about another 5 or 6 different countries been added to the list of around 50 that was already listening. So we thank God for the amount of people that are starting to listen to this podcast. Thank you for you guys who come back week after week. And welcome to anyone who is listening to this for the first time. You can follow me, guys, on Twitter, Paradigm_79. You can interact with me on there. I'm more active on that than any other social media platform, but I am on Instagram and I use that sometimes at Paradigm1979. And you can also support the show if you go to patreon.com/beyondtheparadigm. Have a look on there and you can sign up and become a member to help the show, keep it on air, get access to the Discord server, get a shout out on air. And there's going to be another tier added where we're going to start doing member only episodes. Hopefully going to start doing some live streams with some of the guests we've previously had on there. But like I said, this episode today is particularly relevant. My guest, Makia Freeman, is the main contributor of the Freedom Articles website. Some extremely good articles on there. And we're going to be talking about war, really, and World War One, World War Two, and potentially the road to World War Three. But before I wanted to get into the episode and speak to Makia, what I wanted to do is read from Matthew 24, verses 6 to 8, because this is what Jesus said, and we need to keep this in mind. And you shall hear of wars and rumours of wars. See that you be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, and pestilences, and earthquakes in divers places. All these are the beginning of the sorrows. So he's saying there that it's inevitable these things are going to come to pass. That doesn't mean as Christians we shouldn't pray for peace. We must pray for peace. We must pray for peace in the Middle East, in Ukraine, all over the world. We want peace. Jesus is the Prince of Peace. But he says that these things must come to pass. Now, the word of God cannot be broken. They're going to come to pass. But he also says, see that you be not troubled. And what does the Lord say consistently in the Bible 365 times? Fear not. So there's going to be more wars. There's going to be more rumours of wars. There's going to be what we could call a third world war, which is going to be absolutely devastating. I'm not trying to frighten you, but the word of God talks about these wars and says that they must come to pass. Verse 7 here, nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. So it's inevitable, but we shouldn't fear and we should be aware of the tactics as well. What I want to do in this episode by speaking to Makir is to show you that the mainstream narrative regarding World War One, World War Two wasn't true. And there's this hidden hand working behind the scenes, driving these men to do these atrocious acts, commit all kinds of acts behind the scenes, whether it's a false flag operation to bring someone into a war. But there's all steps that are taking us towards this, these wars. And obviously at the minute, you know, we've heard various countries around the world warning their citizens to get ready for war. No, Sweden said it, Germany said it. We've had it over here in the United Kingdom. You know, people should start to get themselves battery radios and maybe get a few more provisions, and we're in a pre-war era and all this type of stuff. So they're preparing us for an inevitable war that's coming, and obviously they're making Russia out to be our enemy. Russia are not our enemy. Our enemies are in 10 Downing Street. Our enemies are in the White House. Our enemies are in the Canadian Parliament, the Australian Parliament. You can see what I'm saying. It's these globalist psychopaths and their puppets that our enemies, all being driven by the devil himself. So that's enough talk from me. And without further ado, I'm going to go and bring Makir onto the show. All the way from Hawaii, Makir Freeman, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Like I've just been talking off air with you, I've been obviously on your website, thefreedomarticles.com. You've got some fascinating topics on there. You cover many topics, and obviously you've got videos on there and everything. And I know you've wrote a couple of books. But for those in my audience who possibly haven't heard you speak before, who don't know anything about your website, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, like your background and what led you to start doing the research into these areas?
Sure. Well, I've always been a curious kind of fellow, and just backpacking around the world. And I came across a few different people pointing me in the direction of David Icke. And one time I was backpacking in India, I was just on a little beach there, and suddenly I was at this cafe, and they had a free library, a bookshelf. And they said, you can borrow any book you want. It's the honor system. Just take it and just bring it back when you want. And David Icke's book was right there, one of his books. And so I took it, and I started reading it, and I'll never forget, it just blew my mind open. I just thought, wow, this is amazing. Like, all these things that I thought I knew about the world are just being shattered now. And, you know, I never really went back from that point. It just changed something within me, and it woke me up to my purpose. And so later on, from about 2007 onwards, so it's been about 17 years now, I started studying the world conspiracy and who's running the world. Seven, and I've been doing that full time. And at this point, I've written many books, and I have lots of articles on my website, thefreedomarticles.com, and I'm doing videos now. And so basically, I'm just trying to get the information out there about what this plan is, because it's an incredibly diabolical plan, and it is unfortunately being rolled out very, very quickly. And when I look at just the time that I've been researching this full time, it was a different world 17 years ago than what it is now. This plan has advanced. So we need to wake up and do something about this while there's still time. And so that's what's motivating me to get this message out, because I don't want to live in a world that this New World Order cabal, this ruling class is trying to implement. It's going to be a horrific world. And I don't want my kids, my grandkids, I don't want anyone to live in such a world. And there is time that we can stop it and turn it around, but it's going to take people paying attention and waking up and acting from a place of empowered spirituality, empowered sovereignty to turn it around.
It's definitely a diabolical plan, that's for certain. And I get the feeling there's been like a quickening. A lot of people I speak to feel the same way. And especially this year, there seems to be things in the pipeline, maybe a cyber attack, or as we're going to talk about today, like obviously we've got these wars that are always, going on. There always seems to be a war of some description. And obviously we've had sort of two world wars. And I wanted to obviously go through them because it's relevant, I think, for our world today. So, we have like a mainstream sort of narrative regarding the First World War. And I just wanted to sort of read something and get your thoughts on it because I know that obviously there's a lot more to World War One and how it begun and everything. So tensions have been brewing throughout Europe, especially in the troubled Balkan region of the south of Southeast Europe, for years before World War One had actually broke out. And the number of alliances involving European powers, the Ottoman Empire, Russia, other parties have existed for years. But politically, instability in the Balkans, particularly Bosnia, Serbia, and Herzegovina, threatened to destroy these agreements. And the spark that ignited World War One was struck in Sarajevo when Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was shot to death along with his wife Sophie by Serbian nationalist Gavrilo, I can't pronounce his name, Gavrilo Princip, on June 28, 1914. Princip and other nationalists were struggling to end Austro-Hungarian rule over Bosnia and Herzegovina. So this assassination obviously sparked it off. But that's like sort of the mainstream narrative regarding it. But I know that you have a different take on it because you've done a lot of research into these areas, like particularly World War One, World War Two. So other than like the mainstream narrative, what they're telling us, what else is behind the First World War? Like, what's the reality of how it begun and the reasons?
Well, to answer that question, you need to go back in time a little, at least a few decades. But I mean, probably longer than that, but we can start a few decades before it because these wars don't just happen out of nowhere. They're arranged in a long time in advance, and they're arranged by this group that's, you can call them the New World Order, or that's often what they call themselves. But specifically in the late 1800s, there was a group that was called the Round Table, and it was set up by Cecil Rhodes. And he was closely linked to the Rothschilds. So a lot of this comes back to these bloodline banking dynasties and families, especially the Rothschilds, because they were the first ones that got control of Europe. There's a story of the Mayor Amschel Rothschild who sent his five sons out to the capitals of Europe, and then they set up their central banks in those countries, and they started basically taking over like that. And of course, there are other powerful families as well, more on the American side with the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the Fords. But all of these kind of families basically worked together. And specifically what was going on in the 1890s and 1900s was that Great Britain was still the world superpower, but there were other countries that were rising and becoming a challenge to it. And they were starting to get nervous about Germany because Bismarck had united Germany. And the Germans have always been an incredible people in terms of engineering and philosophy and music and science. I mean, they were progressing very rapidly and they were becoming a powerhouse. And Britain could see that they were basically going to overtake them as the main European power of the world. And so what Britain did in advance was it set up secret alliances and treaties with France and Russia because it wanted to basically get the next strongest countries on its side so that it could encircle and go against Germany. That was set up a long time in advance. The knowledge of virtually like the parliaments of those countries. It was just a few people at the very top of France, Britain, and Russia that were signing these deals. They didn't. The population didn't know. Not even really the parliament knew much about them, the respective parliaments or whatever it's called in those countries. And so all these chess pieces were being maneuvered into place before even the outbreak of the assassination in 1914. And another key component that I covered in a recent video is that we have to look at the Jewish Zionist influence here because they had always had a lot of power. And they were basically starting to get control of different countries, but they already had like a good foothold, good influence in Britain. And so the war started. They kind of engineered these pieces into place. There were a series of interlocking treaties. So they knew that if one country declared that another country would declare a war on that country. And so these alliances can be very dangerous things, because suddenly you can go from just a small regional conflict to suddenly six, eight, 10 countries are involved because they all have treaties with each other, defensive alliances. And so that's what happened, right? So suddenly we have all these countries at war with each other. Now, it turns out that the war progressed and Germany was actually pretty strong. I mean, it was also fighting with Austria, Hungary, and whatever. And so by 1916, about halfway through, they were in a dominant position. And they had tried to make peace treaties with England. And they even, some of the peace treaties were quite generous. They were like, look, we'll just go back to the situation as it was before the start of the war, if we can just stop fighting now. But and England was in a weak position and it was considering taking that offer. But this is when the hidden hand that's behind these situations, the some of these Zionist Jews basically said, well, listen, you don't have to take that deal, because I'll tell you what, we can get the young United States in on your side, and you're bound to win because the US has actually become quite a strong country. Now, the US back then wasn't superpower it is now, but it was becoming quite strong. It had already had its own a couple of its own wars. And a lot of these wars are started by false flag operations. That's another key thing to understand in this. So there was a false flag operation with the USS Maine in the Spanish-American War around 1900. So the US was already starting to become part of this club of these rich, powerful, militarily powerful countries that are prepared to use force to start colonizing and pushing their way around the world, and are prepared to use false flag operations. So, even by then, the US had departed a long, long way from the spirit of 1776, that spirit of liberty and individual rights and all that. It had already decided to become kind of like a bully that's going to throw its weight around. And so, Britain basically took the deal, that the offer by these Zionist Jews, because the offer was, we'll get America in on your side, but you have to promise us part of Palestine as a homeland for the Jews. And right at that time, Britain had control over that area of the Middle East. And so it was all engineered in a way that Germany would end up losing. Britain would emerge victorious. Britain would sign this deal. And, Palestine was never Britain's to give to anyone anyway. I mean, it was an occupying power, but it did sign this deal in the form of a letter in 1917 called the Balfour Declaration, which was written by Alfred Balfour, and it was addressed to Lord Rothschild, who, as I said, the Rothschilds, it's so much of this information comes back to the Rothschilds. And so they then used that 1917 Balfour Declaration as a reason, as one of the reasons why they were entitled to a Jewish homeland in Palestine. So that's how it kind of was manipulated behind the scenes. It ended in 1918. Britain, France, and Russia were victorious, but the story doesn't really end there, because then in the Treaty of Versailles in the next year in 1919 in France, they really punished Germany hard, and they imposed horrific restrictions on it so that it would be basically not able to rebuild itself very easily and very quickly, and it would be paying all these war debts to like the victorious, the victors. And the idea of that was, there were a couple of ideas. One was to basically punish the Germans to keep them down, because Britain was jealous of Germany as a rising power, and also to plant the seeds for the next world war, where the Zionists behind the scenes wanted to further entrench their ability to actually set up and create this state of Israel. And they'd gotten a foothold in it. They'd started that thing, but they weren't quite there yet, and they needed another war where it was going to create it. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I read a book by, well, called Facts Are Facts, and I know you mentioned this on your website, Benjamin Friedman, and he obviously talks about that, where there was like sort of a group of Zionists came from Germany actually to represent like the European Jews, and they came and spoke obviously to the War Cabinet in England and basically said, like you said before, that you don't need to agree to sort of stop fighting with Germany. As long as you give us Palestine, we'll get the Americans into the war. And obviously, that's not common knowledge.
Right.
But one of the interesting things that I read on your website is obviously you quote, you talk about Albert Pike and then the predictions for World War One. And I took an excerpt off there, which is interesting, says that, and this is obviously Pike and his prediction. The First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the Tsars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of atheistic communism. The divergences caused by the adjutor or agents of the Illuminati between the British and Germanic empires will be used to foment this war. At the end of the war, communism will be built and used in order to destroy the governments and in order to weaken the religions. I mean, it's pretty spot on that.
Yeah, it's pretty spot on. And it was written decades and decades before World War One. So it's rather creepy and scary to believe that there are forces out there that have this kind of knowledge, and they can be so spot on with their predictions. I mean, this is, it's just so specific. I mean, planning, even the idea of planning a whole philosophy or movement or whatever you want to call communism, that the fact that they'd come up with that idea and then they targeted Russia, they thought Russia's going to be the best place where we can implement this. Well, it worked very well. Russia took on communism and we had the Soviet Union for a long time, 70, 80 odd years. And then even with the dissolution of the Soviet Union, I mean, communism is still, it's hard to separate Russia from communism in some way. And then it went on to China. It went on to other countries in the world, in Asia. It's gone on to Venezuela, Cuba. Now we have China as like the rising world power. It's going to become the world's next superpower. It's already, its economy has outgrown the US a few years ago. It's not going to be that long before it overtakes the US and all the metrics of like how you measure like a superpower or a leading nation. And it's completely communist. And not only is it communist, it's technocratic. And it's actually the blueprint for the New World Order. This is how they want the entire world to be run in this kind of structure. And this all came from this seed idea of communism that went to Russia, then China, a long time ago.
One of the things that obviously within this truther community we hear people talking about is like that, you know, it's just a satanic cult and everything. And that is spot on, that it is satanic. And if people think that mere human beings can plan these things and sort of foresee, you know, into the future, so to speak, on their own, then they need to wake up, because there is a real satanic power. There is a real being called Satan. And he's behind, obviously, ultimately, you've got to look behind what you can see to the unseen. And that's the unseen hand, which you mentioned, the unseen hand. And that's what it is behind all this. And I mean, China is... it's a frightening prospect, really, when you consider that. And you think about the social credit score system that they have. And obviously, like, that's what they want, don't they, for all of us?
Yeah. And even back in the 1970s, when Kissinger was working with Rockefeller to open up China, and they had those meetings in the 70s, Rockefeller wrote an editorial, I think, in the New York Times or a major US newspaper, and he basically said that China's what we want. China's the blueprint. You know, we should look to China, something like that. And these globalists have made no secret about their admiration for China. Klaus Schwab has talked about his admiration for China. Even, you know, little tinpot dictators like Justin Trudeau has talked about his admiration for it. China's the model they want, because it's very centralized. It's very controlled. There's all this surveillance. There's no respect of individual rights or individual freedom. And it's all about a collectivist communist government that tells people what to do, and there's not really much recourse. And on top of that, it's then combined with all the technology, all the coming AI incorporated into all the different things, whether it's smart cities, smart walls, smart devices, using ubiquitous surveillance to monitor everyone 24/7. And you know, this is the whole idea of technocracy, ruled by technology, or ruled by technicians that are administering this technology and using it to basically surveil and control their population.
Yeah, I was I had Charlie Robinson on here last year, and he was telling me about the social credit score, obviously, in China. And he said there was like a bit of an experiment done where this guy got on a bus and lit a cigarette, and by the time he'd got like to his stop, the fine had already come out of his bank account.
Yeah,
the
it's
facial
crazy.
recognition, and it's even that high tech where it doesn't even need to recognize your face. It can recognize who you are by how you walk.
Yeah. I
It's
mean, it's all the dystopian novels we've been warned about, whether the 1984 by George Orwell or Brave New World by Huxley, or a lot of the others, movies as well, warning us about this future that's coming if we don't pay attention. This technology that's been invented and is increasing serve humanity, but it can also be used to control and enslave us. And China's definitely using it against their own population. And this is why we need to wake up to this.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I find that, alternative media sources like a podcast like mine, because just we can, as independent podcasters, we can obviously broadcast these types of things, because I'm not paid by anyone. This is completely independent. So I will cover stuff like this. And the more of us that do it, the better. So obviously we've been talking, about World War One and everything, but there's obviously a Second World War. And again, I'll just go through sort of the mainstream narrative, what we're fed. But again, there's more to it, as obviously you can explain to us. So after becoming Chancellor of Germany in 1933, Hitler swiftly consolidated power, anointing himself Führer or Supreme Leader in 1934. And he was obsessed with the idea of the superiority of the pure German race, which he called Aryan. Hitler believed that war was the only way to gain the necessary Lebensraum, or living space, forgive me, I don't speak German, guys, for the German race to expand. And in the mid 1930s, he secretly began the rearmament of Germany, a violation of the Versailles Treaty, which obviously we mentioned. After signing alliances with Italy and Japan against the Soviet Union, Hitler sent troops to occupy Austria in 1938, and the following year annexed Czechoslovakia. Hitler's open aggression went unchecked as the United States and Soviet Union were concentrated on internal politics at the time, and neither France or Britain, the two other nations most devastated by the Great War, were eager for another confrontation. German troops then invaded Poland on the 1st of September 1939, which triggered World War II, and in response to German aggression, Britain, France declared war on Nazi Germany. But again, there's more to it, isn't there?
Oh yeah, there's plenty more to it. World War II is even more interesting because, just like I was talking about with World War One, how these alliances were set up. Well, the same thing was happening in World War II. We had these alliances, and often what happens is these big countries say to the smaller countries, "Hey, if you do this thing, we'll step in to support you." So Britain was basically egging Poland on to kind of get into a skirmish over Danzig and this area of the German-Polish border where there were German speakers. So we've got that going on, and so Poland felt more emboldened to push back against Hitler, knowing that they had Britain and France in their corner. But to kind of go back from 1919, yeah. So as I was saying, the reparations were strict. We had the Weimar Republic in the 1920s in Germany, which was horrific for the Germans there. We're told all these stories about how regular Germans were pushing boroughs full of money to buy just a loaf of bread. And so in these kind of conditions where people are so poor and desperate and discontent, it's fertile soil for a tyrant to arise, because the Greek philosopher Plato once said, when the tyrant first appears, he always appears as a protector. So people are naturally going to gravitate towards someone that's like, "Hey, I'm going to bring you out of all this. I'm going to save you." Like, it's easy for the demagogue tyrant type figure to appeal to that. So Hitler came to power, but we have to remember this fascinating part of history, that he was elected. I mean, he tried to do a coup early on in the 1920s. It failed and he got put in jail. And that's when he wrote Mein Kampf. But when he actually got elected, it was a legitimate election. Now, he didn't get elected by a very big margin. But what happened was that soon after he got elected, he then started doing certain things so that he could consolidate power. And like I said, history is replete with these false flag operations. And so the Germans had a false flag operation in 1933 with the burning of the Reichstag. And then he could blame it on the enemies of the state, and he could consolidate power. And somehow he managed to pull off this merging of the positions of the chancellor and I think the president into one position. And so he basically just took all this power onto himself, and that kind of went from there. But that's still, even with that, like, there were a lot of people that take the alternative position and say, well, Hitler was helping his people and it was a good thing, and he was increasing the economy and doing all these things. But then when 1939 came around, then basically the war started. There was a skirmish on the Polish border. Germany was very powerful and then overtook France very quickly. But again, we had another situation where Germany probably could have defeated Britain. Hitler was offering peace treaties to Britain. Britain was probably considering accepting. Churchill was in power by then, and Churchill was dead against that. He was like, no. And so what happened? Well, again, the Zionist Jews came in and said the same thing had happened in World War One. We'll get America on your side. You don't have to worry, but you're going to have to help us create. And so what they had done in World War One to get America in was that they did this false flag operation with the Lusitania. The Lusitania was a ship, and they had there was foreknowledge around that event where basically it was even published in advance in an American newspaper that the Germans had intelligence that something was going to happen with the Lusitania. And what happened in World War II was Pearl Harbor, same thing. There is all this evidence that Roosevelt knew exactly about that, and he let it happen because America was looking for a way to get into the war. And of course, the public was against it, just like in World War One, the public was against it, and Woodrow Wilson was president, and he was on a ticket of let's keep out of Europe's wars. Same thing when Franklin Roosevelt was president in the World War II days in America. It was not a popular position to enter the war, so they needed a false flag event to say, "Hey, we've been attacked. We've got no choice but to enter this." And so Japan and Germany were allies, of course, in World War II. Then that was public support for the war. Now, one of the clues we have that this happened was that the US was basically doing this policy of really choking Japan economically in the years leading up to this. They were making it very difficult for Japan to do things. There were all these embargoes. Japan was a very small country, like in terms of its area, of its size, but it had quite a lot of people for that small, the islands that they're on there. And they were looking for oil. They were desperate for oil. And so they were starting to invade the rest of Asia trying to get oil. And the US was making it really difficult for them to get oil. And so that's when basically Japan took the gamble and attacked Pearl Harbor, not knowing it was a trap. The US had put some of its ships there, like sitting ducks. And so the admirals that were in charge there took the rap for it. They were like, oh, that they got blamed for it. But actually it was Roosevelt that organized all that and made sure that there were enough ships there so that it would look like, oh, America's lost all these ships. What a tragedy. And make it even worse. And just like something like 3,000 people were said to have been killed on 9/11, something like 3,000 people died in Pearl Harbor too. And this is just like a horrific aspect of this whole agenda. I mean, you were referring more to earlier to about Satanism or, satanic influences running this whole thing. The people that are running this, it doesn't matter what country they're from, what race they're from, that there is definitely a satanic element that's behind all of this. And that element that dark force does not care at all about human sacrifice. In fact, it thrives on that. And so it thinks nothing about sacrificing 3,000 people to achieve its political or geopolitical aims. And so, yeah, we immediately at war with both Germany and Japan. It took 3 or 4 years for it to push Japan back and then drop bombs on it in 1945. And then same thing, it went on Britain's side. They landed at Normandy and they pushed Germany back and eventually defeated Germany. So you can there's different ways to look at this, but basically what had happened before World War II had even started was that there was an agreement or a transfer agreement whereby Nazi Germany would allow safe passage of some Jews out of Germany, out of Europe, to Palestine, and they were allowed to kind of take their assets and transfer their money over and all that. Like this was before the war. It was peacetime. And so it's a fascinating aspect of history because, I mean, if people don't know about this, they would automatically think, oh, Nazis hated Jews, Nazis killed Jews. But this was a time when actually the agenda of the Zionist Jews and the agenda of the Nazis were aligned. And that's why they made this agreement, because the Nazis wanted the Jews out of Germany. Or at the very least, they wanted them to have a downsized role because they felt like the Jews had taken over the power centers of Germany, and there was some reason for them to think that. And the Zionists wanted as many Jews as possible to come to this new country they were creating to kind of bolster to it, and naturally enough, because they were stealing the land. And so it was an alignment of agendas. Now later on, the agendas weren't aligned anymore. But it just kind of goes to show, like, history is not black and white. We have to really read and look at the facts and to understand all this. And just before I kind of pass it back to you, I do want to mention at this point that when I'm talking about Jewish power and the Zionist Jews and all this, I'm not talking about all Jewish people. There are plenty of Jewish people all over the world who have no idea about this. They're not involved in any big conspiracy. They're just ordinary people trying to live their life. And indeed, there have been Jews that have lived in the Middle East peacefully alongside Muslims for thousands of years. We've seen that in Iran, in Iraq. Like, when this whole part of this whole agenda is to agitate these tensions between these two religions specifically, and also Christianity, but it goes against the peaceful coexistence that these two religions have had, the adherents of these religions have had for a very long time. So it's an artificially created tension. It doesn't need to be like that. And there are many Jews who are not Zionists who are speaking out against this and saying that Zionism is an abomination. It's basically like a settler colonial mindset. It's stealing land from Palestine. It has nothing to do with Judaism. They despise and detest the fact that they are using Judaism as a cover for their activities of land stealing and land grab, and they don't want anything to do with it. And they believe it goes against the true spirit of Judaism and the Torah and all of this. So, let's be really clear that, and not just kind of lump all Jews into one category. There are plenty of Jews that are non-religious that don't even know about any of this. There are plenty of Jews that live all in many countries that aren't part of this. What I'm talking about when I'm talking about this specific part of Jewish power is there's a core of Zionism and Judaism that is called Sabbatean Frankism. And it is based on this guy that proclaimed himself to be a messiah called Shabbatai Zevi, who lived in the 1600s. And later on, there was Jacob Frank, who kind of took over his ideas. And they created their own whole cult. It was a very satanic cult. And it infiltrated and took over Judaism. And basically, this inner core of Zionism, the Rothschilds are part of it. And these are the ones that are pushing this idea of wanting to manipulate America, manipulate Britain, take over the power centers in Germany, create their own land, steal Palestine. All of this is coming from this inner core. It is not the mainstream part of Judaism, and it is not ordinary Jews. So I just want to be clear about that.
Referred to in the Bible, actually, it talks there's in Revelation regarding the Jews that are not Jews and they are of the synagogue of Satan. That's what the Bible specifically says about them. And I did an episode previously on the Khazarian Empire, and we talked obviously about the Ashkenazi Jews, and that the reality is of the Zionists today, it's Babylonian Talmudism. It's not they're not following like the Old Testament. And the Talmud says some horrific things. I quoted some regarding like what they say about Christ, what they say about Christians and stuff, about killing them and all these types of things. And like you said, for hundreds, if not thousands of years, Muslims, Christians, and Jews lived in peace. I mean, and as a Christian, I obviously don't believe what Muslims believe and everything like that. But we're like Christ said, my servants are not of this world. Or else we would fight, but we won't fight physically because his kingdom's not of this world. So we're peaceful. And you can disagree with people without fighting with them. And like you said, we're not talking about the ordinary Jewish people who are caught up in all this, who haven't really got a clue. We're talking about this core of Zionists, they're Satanists as well. Like I said, the Bible says they are of the synagogue of Satan. And there's these poor Palestinians as well. But let's be clear. I mean, you can be against Zionism and you can be against Hamas. Just because you're against a Zionist doesn't mean you're pro-Hamas. I'm against both. and for the ordinary people. Do you know what I mean? The people caught up in all this. So
That's a great point.
it doesn't have to be either or. It doesn't mean you're on one side or the other. It's like, listen, I reject both ideologies. I reject Hamas's ideology and the Zionist ideology. But let's be clear, Mossad created Hamas anyway, because without Hamas, there wouldn't be a state of Israel. They need Hamas, and that's why they were created. And obviously, we're going to get into this. But what I wanted to do again is, obviously, we were talking about the Second War. And again, I've took an excerpt regarding the prediction that Albert Pike made, which is on your website. So he said the Second World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascist and the political Zionist. This war must be brought about so that Nazism is destroyed and that political Zionism be strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. During the Second World War, international communism must become strong enough in order to balance Christendom, which would then be restrained and held in check until the time when we would need it for the final social cataclysm. I mean, it's spot on again, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, just like it was spot on for the First World War, they knew exactly what they were planning with the Second World War, and they established communism as this huge force, mostly in Russia, but then, as I explained, it spread to all these other countries now. And so what we had right at the conclusion of World War II was the Cold War. Then we had the US-led West, the capitalism versus the Russian Eastern communism, and that even though that never turned into a hot war. I mean, we were pretty close at certain times with the Cuban Missile Crisis, and there was another incident in the 1980s with a NATO exercise that Russia thought was actually a live exercise, Able Archer, and that was probably even closer to getting into a hot war than the Cuban Missile Crisis. And then all the deliberate provocations and tension that we've had just in the last 10 years, with all the Russophobia, with all the baiting of Russia, all the sanctions against Russia, baiting them into invading Ukraine, the coup in Ukraine in 2014, Victoria Nuland boasting that the US has pumped $5 billion into regime change, getting the Nazis in power in Ukraine, like all of that. I mean, it's just this demonic force that's overtaken these different world governments, especially the Israeli and the US ones. I see is really, really pushing it. But in a lot of these world governments, there's this force that's just pushing us towards tension and war. But yeah, basically, at the end of World War II, things were then set up to go into the next phase, which was these blocks of capitalism and communism. Meanwhile, Israel got its foothold, and it would declare itself a country in 1948. And then it immediately just started committing genocide against the Palestinians, starting just grabbing villages, killing entire things, expanding its land. And if you look at Israel in 1948 and the maps and how much it expanded its land to now, it's horrific. I mean, it has just taken more and more and more land. At one point during the 1967 war, it even had the Sinai Peninsula. It gave some of that back, but it's had constant fights with Syria and Lebanon in the north. It has deliberately, this is a really important point, it has deliberately taken land in such a way that the two parts of Palestine now, the West Bank and Gaza, are separate from each other. They are not joined by any land corridor. So that makes it very difficult indeed for there to be a two-state solution where there can just be Israel and Palestine, because you've got this country with two parts that aren't connected. Israel goes right through it. So this was not an accident. It was deliberate, because Israel from the start was trying to prevent that from Palestine to becoming a full nation of its own. And yeah, it's being pushed by, if you look at the governments that have run Israel, most of them have been very right-wing, very ultra-Zionist. There's been a few peacemakers, occasionally. They had a prime minister, Yitzhak Rabin, but he was assassinated by some hardcore, because they felt like, oh, this guy's being too pro-Arab, he's being too peaceful, and he was killed. Netanyahu is an ultra-Zionist. He's been incredibly ruthless with his attitude towards the Palestinians. And yeah, as you mentioned, Israel created Hamas because it's useful. Israel is copying what Britain and the US especially, but all these countries have done for many years to control their populations. They create enemies because enemies are useful. Then they can rally the people behind that, the government, and say, hey, we've got this enemy. And that can either mean we go to war against the enemy, or it can mean domestic policies and domestic tyranny. Like, we need more surveillance, we need more control, we have to curtail your rights because we're fighting an enemy, you know. They use it in any way they want. Enemies are really useful. So, especially an enemy that they kind of fund and control, because then they have their tabs and their fingers on what's this enemy planning, what's he thinking, how strong is he. So Israel controlled a lot of this with the setup of Hamas, and they wanted a radical group like Hamas rather than a more secular, reasonable group like the PLO to negotiate with. And so Hamas has served its purpose perfectly for Israel. And then, lo and behold, on October 7th, 2023, last year, Hamas attacks Israel. And there is no way that Israel, with the kind of investment in its technology and its surveillance, it exports its technology and software to countries around the world. It's a world leader in it. And so that fence is very, very high tech. It's probably one of the most high tech fences or walls in the entire world. There is absolutely no way that Israel did not know that Hamas was coming, or that Hamas could have been allowed to penetrate the fence on that fence. Part of their job was the surveillance and monitoring. And they said that if something like a cat or a bird, or one person even said a cockroach, if some animal like that touched the fence or got within it, they would know about it right then. So if that's the case, if it's that high tech, how could they not know when entire pickup trucks and tractors are bypassing and penetrating the fence? Not to mention that there were Hamas fighters actually flying in on hang gliders, which is, I mean, sometimes I just have to laugh at the absurdity, at the audacity of these people trying to pull this off. I mean, to think that Israel, with all its high-tech missiles that it's getting from the US, would not be able to shoot down a hang glider. I mean, it's just absurd. But they pulled it off, and unfortunately, even though there is a rising awareness, there are still a lot of people that don't know that Israel allowed this to happen for political purposes.
Oh, 100%. The time, as soon as I seen it on the news, I was just like, as if they didn't know about it. Like, and there was just, obviously things are coming out since that they were like ordered to stand down. The IDF was ordered to stand down. I've read articles where it said that, IDF soldiers themselves at one point were shooting on their own civilians. There's all kinds of horrific stories coming out, and people need to just wake up. They can't just listen to the mainstream and just accept it. Like you said, I mean, it's insulting, really. These people flying in on essentially lawnmowers with like a parachute, like you said, the handgun, but that's essentially, it's almost like a lawnmower, flying lawnmower. And it can shoot down rockets, but can't shoot down someone on a flying lawnmower. I mean, it's just a. I mean, we're laughing, but it's serious, and there's people out there that believe it, and this is what, the aim of this podcast is. It's like just raise awareness of the, the lies that the ubiquitous, and it's pulling the wool over our eyes all the time, or they're trying to anyway. And obviously, you talked about Russia being baited into the Ukraine, and that's obviously what's happened, and NATO's expanded right up to Russia's border, and now obviously Sweden's been granted access. I mean, if people can't see what's going on here, they need to wake up, because Russia's not our enemy. I'm not saying Putin's a great guy or anything like that, and Russia's the bastion of freedom or anything like that, but they're not directly threatening us. I mean, NATO are on their doorstep. How do they expect Russia to act?
Yeah, I mean, NATO's been baiting Russia for a very long time. And Putin, and not just in his interview with Tucker Carlson, but I've watched his interviews throughout the years, not just interviews, his speeches and things like that. And he's been very clear that Russia has again and again reached out its hand and said, okay, let's work together with the US. Can we be in NATO? He was rebuffed on that. Can we agree that we can fight terrorism together? Like, that's a common enemy. Russia reached out to the US after 9/11. Then the US basically was constantly pushing Russia back and saying, no, you stay over there, because Russia was designated as the next enemy, to fight in the future war. And And then the way that the US kept reneging on its word with NATO not expanding eastward, that happened time and time again, broken promises where they said, oh, we're not going to expand anymore eastward. And then suddenly another Eastern European country would join and another and another. And you mentioned Sweden just joined. Also, Finland has joined. Yeah. And Finland has been for a very long time, historically, the neutral country where leaders of the US and Russia would meet. So now Finland's part of NATO. It's right on Russia's border. And you've got the US pulling out of all these treaties throughout the last 10, 15 years under both Democratic and Republican presidents. The agenda pushes forward no matter whether it's left or right. Trump was famously friendly towards Putin and has good words to say about him. But yet, if you look at actually Trump's policies and his actions towards Russia, they were very hostile. Trump did a lot of oversaw a lot of hostile stuff to Russia rather than actually trying to genuinely repair the relations between the two countries. The US keeps pulling out of treaties. And so Russia's like, look, we can't keep doing this. If you keep pulling out of these treaties, which were the foundation of the global, not just the bilateral, but the global security architecture, we're going to have to pull out of the treaty and we're going to have to develop weapons because you're developing weapons. Like, this basically leads to an arms race. Mm-hmm. And this was the kind of thing that JFK was trying to stop. He was basically saying, let's have nuclear non-proliferation treaties and treaties to stop an arms race. Because if we get into these arms races, then all this money from the US and Russia, but other countries too, goes into the military industrial complex instead of actually education and health. So instead of like pulling people, mankind, it goes into just stockpiling ridiculous arsenals of weapons that could destroy the world many times over. And so we were on a track to not go down that path, but yet it's been reversed. It's been undone. That's what people don't realize. Like, a lot of the good work that was done by various leaders throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s has now been undone in the last two decades. And so we're at a very, very dangerous time. And so Russia has responded by basically saying, okay, well, we're going to have to invest in arms because the US is. And what they've tried to do is build weaponry that's kind of, it's like asymmetric warfare. So they've developed these hypersonic missiles that are faster than any other missile that's any country has and that can't be shot down. And they've developed these submarines that are completely undetectable and can shoot missiles from like underwater. And so one could be parked in the Atlantic Ocean and could like suddenly come up and shoot a missile that could destroy New York. And so like, it's dangerous, but Putin's basically saying, look, I don't want to do this. I want to sit down and negotiate. But every time I try to do that, the US doesn't. It just keeps building more weapons. So I basically have no choice. So a lot of the alternative media really has a good view of Putin and looks at him as like a savior, a hero. Like, there's a lot of hero worshiping going on, and I don't think we should do that. I think Putin definitely has his own dark side. He's ruthless. There is actually good evidence that he was involved in his own false flag operation around the time when he came to power, around 2000-2001. So we have to be careful not to fall into that. But on one level of the kind of geopolitical US-Russia relations level, yeah, I think what he's saying is fair, that the US has been the aggressor. So, you know, we have to be aware of what the US is doing. Of course, it's been led by its own neoconservative core, which is also linked to Zionism. So it's the same kind of force that we've talked about behind World War One and World War Two that has this grip on the US and now is targeting Russia through US belligerent US policy. But yeah, this story hasn't ended. It's continuing. It's pushing us more towards World War III. And this time they're hoping to get Russia, China, and Iran involved because those three countries are very aligned militarily, economically. Iran was sending Russia drones at some point during the start of the Ukraine war. Iran is about to join BRICS. Russia and China are the main two countries of BRICS. Russia and China have incredible ties and connection relationship. So we're looking at this block forming again in the east, and we've got this tension point in Ukraine, this tension point in Gaza, and this could develop into a regional conflict or another world war if we're not careful.
Yeah, you can see the players are all being put in position now, because obviously that we've got there's regional wars going on all over the place, and then you've got tensions over Taiwan, and then obviously the US and UK have been bombing the Houthi rebels in Lebanon. Again, it's like the hidden hand behind it, and it seems, well, it is unstoppable. It's inevitable, actually, sadly, that there is going to be a major conflict. And so, like I've told you off air, that I'm a Christian, and to get some perspective on how these things are going to come about, well, the reason why is the unseen again. So in Revelation chapter 6, verse 6, it says this. It says there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. So the great sword is representative of war. So even though we can't see that, we can see it as in what's going on now, because in reality, we can see that it's absolute madness for the US and the rest of NATO to fight with Russia. We can see that as madness, but there's this power driving these people, and to implement, these policies that are forcing sort of Russia to do what it's doing, and it's unstoppable, unfortunately. And I think people need to prepare for it. And again, I'll go back to that Albert Pike again on your website, and he wrote again, the Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of differences caused by the agents of the Illuminati between the political Zionist leaders of the Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam, the modern Muslim Arabic world, and political Zionism, the state of Israel, mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, would be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilist and the atheist, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effects of absolute atheism, origin of savagery, and the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitude disillusioned with Christianity. And this is the thing, right? The hitting on Christianity. And when I talk about Christianity, I don't talk about, I'm not mean the Catholic Church and all these established churches like the Church of England. They're apostates. We're talking true Christianity, people who genuinely believe the Bible and Jesus' teachings and truly follow him. And that's how you can get a sense of that what is true, because again, Pike, they're targeting Christianity. They mention it again in here. But I mean, and he goes on to say, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out into public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement which will follow the destruction of Christianity, atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. These people aren't atheists, and that's what people need to understand, that atheism was basically brought about by the Freemasons. Darwin didn't even believe it. These people are spiritual, but in a bad way. And again, Pike mentioning Lucifer, Satanist, like we keep talking about this Satanism. And that's a frightening prediction again.
Yeah, it is a frightening prediction, and it's all the more frightening because, as you said, we can see the puzzle pieces being, or the chess pieces being moved into place. And I firmly believe that there's still time to stop this. I think that there is enough awareness, we can stop this. But it's going to take people really paying attention, not just to the surface level news, but looking behind the scenes and seeing, okay, what's really the force that's pushing all this? There's this force of Israel, trying to take more land and kill Palestinians, fight with all its neighbors. There's the US, which seems to just be trying to get into all these wars. Like, what is really driving these countries? Well, yeah, we can look at Zionism, but it really is Satanism behind it. It's really this satanic cult that has infiltrated a lot of different countries' religions. It's not bound to just one area. It's worked through the Freemasons and the secret societies. It's worked through Zionism. It's worked through the U.S. government. It's worked through a lot of governments, and it's really thriving on war, death, destruction. But it's basically trying to set up the long term goal of this cult, which is a one world government, the New World Order, where there's just a single centralized world government that is control of all countries. So it's basically destroying all national identity and national borders, and then having one of everything, one police force, one army, one currency that they control. And China is, coming back to what we were saying earlier in this interview, China is the model for that, because they want a technocratic government where everyone is monitored and the technology is used against the average citizen, so that there's no escape. No, if they want to not follow the rules, they're immediately discovered for not doing that. They are fined or imprisoned or reported. Or who knows, their energy, like you were saying, a Chinese citizen lit a cigarette and had money taken out of his account. Well, that's just the beginning. What happens if you are then denied being able to buy groceries, or you can't turn your heating on and you're in a very cold climate, or you can't travel, you can't basically use your pass to get on a bus or a train or a plane? Like, there are all sorts of things where the level of control could be absolutely insane. And that's what they're really aiming for. The wars, as horrific as they are just stepping stones to consolidate all these countries into this one world system. And they have to do that by creating tension and playing sides off against each other, because then they come forward and they pose as the saviors to the problem they created. They say, well, clearly we just can't seem to stop wars. There's all this fighting going on. We need a single world body that can adjudicate all the disagreements between countries. And that way we'll have a world of peace and there'll be no more wars. And so just basically give us more power and we'll create this world body. And the UN was created for this purpose, and it's been given more and more power over the years since it was set up, because it's been maneuvered to be this coming world government.
Yeah. There's definitely going to be a one world government. And one of the things that I think about is, right, so we're talking about a one world government and a one world army. So if we've got a one world army, who are they going to fight? Well, they're not going to fight anybody. Well, as in another army, they're going to be used against you. They're going to be used against me. That's who the one world army is going to be used against. Because if there's only one world army, there isn't another army to fight. So that's what people need to be aware of.
Yeah, although I will just add, it may be like a one world police force on one hand to fight against its own citizens, but then it could be a one world army in the sense that they may use another outside threat to get people behind this, of the extraterrestrial invasion. And so they may fake an ET invasion. There's, for a long time, people in the truth or conspiracy research community have talked about Operation Bluebeam, which is exposed by a great Canadian researcher, Serge Monast, quite a while ago. And he talked about how the state of holograms and holographic technology was very advanced. And so they could put all sorts of stuff in the sky and make it look like a new world power that was going to deal with like this alien threat. So I don't know if it's going to come to that, because if they pulled that off, it would completely change the world forever. There would be no going back from it. But clearly it's a plan on the agenda. It could be something they pull out with this. Again, it all comes back to the same aim of what they're trying to do, create a one world government, one world army, etc.
I can see it coming to fruition, that like faked alien invasion. And the reason why I believe that is because I don't believe in little green men. But in terms of extraterrestrials, that just means like a being that's not from Earth. And the Bible speaks about these fallen angels that came to Earth, and there was the Nephilim on the Earth. And one of the things about this current like UFO phenomena is it's a spiritual thing again, because you find that there's a lot of occult people who were involved in the UFOs, or have sort of said they've been abducted. If you speak to them, like I've interviewed someone on my show, and I know other people who've interviewed many abductees, they've been involved in the occult. So how I can see it playing out. Obviously, you mentioned Project Bluebeam and obviously these holograms and everything, but the way that they could fake it would be obviously using military technology as well, in line with these holograms, to sort of destroy some buildings and things like that, so it looks real. And obviously we've spoke about a one world government, and you know that they're going to say, oh well, there's been all these wars. Well, this is where the Antichrist comes in, because he's the guy at the end, the final ruler, who will have some answers, and everyone will think he's great. And that's the problem, because he'll be so well, he'll be a great orator, probably like never we've seen before, and unfortunately many people will follow him. And you can see it being set up, because the world's crying out for answers. You know, it's a painful place, isn't it? There's, we see war, like say in Palestine, Ukraine, Africa, and you know, I can see that. I mean, personally, I think there's not long left. I'm not talking like a year or two, but I firmly believe, like Christians, obviously for a lot of long time, you hear them talking about the last days and everything, and we would say that we've been in the last days since Christ ascended to heaven. But when we talk like the last of the last days, like almost at the door, that's almost how it feels now. I mean, I'm not a prophet, I'm not going to start putting like dates on it, which I ain't got a clue, but and obviously with, you know, the neural link thing, and there's the mark of the beast, obviously you must be familiar with that. You can see that there's these types of technologies now in place, what 50 to 100 years ago we didn't have. It's been a fascinating chat with you, Makir. You know, you've got great knowledge, and like I said at the beginning of the show, you've got a website. So before you go, could you tell people about your website, about your books also that you've wrote, where they can sort of get hold of them?
Sure. So basically, the main website, if you want to find my work, is thefreedomarticles.com, thefreedomarticles. And that has articles that I've written. I think there's like 500 or 600 of them, plus videos and I've been running that site since 2012. I also have four books that I've written. My last two are available in print, and they're pretty important ones. I actually have a copy here. So this one is Break Your Chains. This is like my masterwork. It's a very thick book, but this goes completely into who's running the world, how they're doing it, like the problem of the conspiracy in the first half. And then in the second half, I cover the solutions, what we can do about it. Because over the years, I've had so many people say, oh, well, it's all very fine to like be all doom and gloom and tell us everything that's wrong with the world. What are we supposed to do about it? So Break Your Chains is the answer to that. I arrange the second half of the book in chapters where I talk about the things you can do on the physical plane, the mental plane, the spiritual plane, the technological plane, to take back your power, to stop this agenda, to see what you can do to increase your own power and sovereignty and your community, your area. And there is a lot we can do about this. It is not hopeless. It is not written in stone. This is the way the world is heading, but it doesn't have to be like that. A very simple of the example is, you might have heard people say, what if they declared a war and no one turned up? You know, like what if all these countries said, okay, the leader just said, we're going to war with Russia or Palestine or Ukraine, and the soldiers said, no, we're not going to fight. And it's the same thing in general with society, when you have these politicians who say they represent the people, they claim they represent the people, but yet they are a tiny, they're like not even 1%, 0.1% of the population. If the not just says we're not going to do that, there is not enough enforcement agents for them to enforce their will upon the people. So they know that. And there's always this fear they have that people are going to rebel or revolt or disobey. And they try to hide that fear. But at the end of the day, they can't get around that we have the numbers, whether it's in military soldiers having to carry out orders or just peaceful people, civilians, citizens not following decrees, diktats of their government. So that's what it comes down to. And there are strength in numbers. And we can see through the lies and propaganda and false flag operations and not be sucked into it. So Break Your Chains gets into all of that and offers the solutions. The other book that I just released is called The International Satanic Network Exposed. And this is an amazing one if you'd want to just get up to speed on what the force that's really running the world. And I've talked, you know, I've alluded to it a little bit in this interview about how this is this satanic cult, but I get into the actual names, like the people, the US presidents, prime ministers from other countries, the royals, the people that are involved in the satanic ritual that are running it. And this book contains a lot of survivors' accounts who've been at these satanic ritual ceremonies. Some of them were even bred. They were even like brought up to actually take part in this network, and they broke free and they broke their programming and they blew the whistle and they've explained what really goes on. So I recommend those two books. That'll really bring you up to speed if you want to find out more about this. I'm working on another book right now, but yeah, check out the Freedom Articles if you want to kind of see any of my work.
Yeah, just reiterate, guys, it is a fantastic website. I've been reading a number of articles. I found it quite a while ago, and believe it or not, I had to change my settings on my internet to be able to access it. I think it came up with something like disinformation, and I thought, well, if that's the case, then this is a good website, and I need to be on there. So I changed my settings, and it's one of the websites, like an exception where I can go on. So it's one I've saved, and I've been going on it. It's been fascinating talking to you, Makia. So thanks for coming on again. I'd just encourage people to go out and have a look at that website. A lot of Makia's videos are quite short. That's one of the things I like about it. Some of them 10, 15 minutes long, but they are got a lot of detail in them. And like Makia said, he's been doing the website since 2012, so he's done a lot of research. So that's it for this episode, guys. I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you, Makia. I'll be back next week with another guest. I'm Paul, and this is Beyond the Paradigm.
Am I crazy? We don't use that word in here.